The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. And today I am with Dr. Steve Taubman. Yeah, nailed that pronunciation. There you go. Yeah. Okay. So if you are listening to us on the air, you're going to want to double back and catch us on facebook.com/getrealtoheal so that you can see the Facebook Live of this very interview where we had some wonderful banter before the show. And now we get to have banter on the air. And I'm so glad that you're here, Dr. Steve.
I hope I still have some banter left. What if I'm banter, banter depleted?
Well, if not banter, then much wisdom.
Okay, wisdom.
I know.
I get down with that.
That I know. Yeah, you're full of that. So, all right. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so glad to have you. So, where to even start? I guess let's start at the beginning, right? So, when we say doctor, you are a doctor of?
Chiropractic and sports medicine.
Okay.
So, that's my background. That's where I came from.
Yeah, and it's been an amazing journey. Of course, you built this successful practice. It was the largest sports medicine practice in Vermont.
Yes.
Correct? And then you decided to make a transition, and I suppose we'll pick up there.
Oh, okay, great. Well, that's a good place to pick up. I ran a, as you said, successful practice for a number of years, and all of the external trappings of success were there, and I was unhappy. And for a variety of reasons that it took me a while to kind of really figure out. You know, for one thing, I think I didn't belong inside of four walls. And then there were just the normal annoyances of being in your own little business. So I had a lot of things that were playing on me. So I ended up having a profound experience where for the longest time I was trying to build my enthusiasm back up. You know, come on, you got to make it work. So I'd go to a seminar or two and try to get, you know, a little bit of enthusiasm back. And I'd keep it for, you know, for like a week and a half, and then I'd be, oh. And I was at the point in my practice where, you know, I'd go into work at 8 o'clock in the morning. And by 9 o'clock, I would have already looked at my watch like 10 times.
Oh.
So I really knew the just terrible drudgery I was starting to experience. Nothing against chiropractic. It's a great profession and I had great patients, but it wasn't meant for me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I needed to be elsewhere. So there was a very specific moment where I was at a conference. I was at an annual, you know, Chiropractic Association conference. We had a motivational speaker on stage talking about how great chiropractic is and how we've got to celebrate ourselves. And everybody, you know, raise your fist in the air and say, yes, you know, and like that kind of like really pumping up our enthusiasm. And I was blank. I had nothing. I wanted to be excited, but I had no feelings at all. I was in the back of the room and I picked up a magazine in front of me and it had, turned to the back and I found a company that appraises practices for sale. And I got up and I went to a payphone. And I called them, and right then, in the middle of the seminar, I said, I'm selling my practice.
Just right then.
Right then.
Done.
Yeah, and that was it. So a year later, I was out of practice, and I had a whole new life.
So you had helped many, many people, had this wonderful ripple effect, and then, you know, the enthusiasm when it leaves, though.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than living your life, you know, with something that doesn't really feed your soul.
So what fed your soul?
Well, it turned out a few things. One was being an entertainer, because that's part of who I am, right? So I learned to do magic. I was performing magic. Ultimately, after I sold my practice, I became a hypnotist.
Yeah. So you went from being, you owned a sports medicine practice and a doctor of chiropractic to a magician and a hypnotist. Were your parents still alive?
Yeah, it's the first question people ask.
No, I think that's fantastic. So, okay, it's so interesting though, right? So you found this passion, you pursued it, and you've made an amazing name out of it.
Yeah, it really kind of took me in the right direction. I think sometimes we have to just sort of follow our spiritual nose. Where am I being led? And what do I need to do to master whatever that is and embrace it? So yeah, I ended up within a few years, I became the official hypnotist for MTV Spring Break. And I performed in Jamaica and Barbados and the Bahamas and on TV and had a lot of fun doing it. And while I was doing that, I was also doing my own personal development work and learning how to meditate and learning about mindfulness. And
so that wasn't something that you had done prior.
I had dabbled. I knew a little bit about it, but it really took getting out of practice, because after practice, I took a year off. I went to Guatemala, and that's where I learned how to do nothing.
That, and actually, that is a fine skill.
It is a very difficult skill to learn.
Especially in today in America. I've noticed we just don't know how to do that. That's one of the first things I work on with my health coaching clients, is the art of relaxation and doing nothing, being still.
Well, you know, I think it was Blake who said that all of man's misery comes from his inability to sit still and alone in a room.
Wise words.
Yeah.
Wise words. So, okay, so you started working on this mindfulness meditation, and then what?
Well, then what happened was I was doing my hypnosis shows in for spring break, and I had this epiphany where I, you know, for those of you who are listening who may never have seen a hypnosis show, I bring a bunch of people on stage and I have them doing silly things. I have people milking a cow and conducting an orchestra, and I've got one guy thinks he's pregnant. Another guy thinks he's the father. And in the middle of this one particular show, I decided to try something new. So I took one of my subjects and I told him that when he woke up, three things would happen. I said, number one, you don't believe you're hypnotized. And I said, number two, this is the worst show you've ever seen and you're aggravated with me. And number three, there's an invisible wall 3 feet in front of you. So I woke everybody up and I said, how's everybody doing? And this guy screams and yells at me. And I said, well, what's the problem? He says, this show's terrible. I said, well, leave. The guy gets up, he takes three steps, hits the invisible wall. Can't move past, he can't budge it. He's just pushing and pushing, his face is turning red. And he finally gives up and he sits down, he crosses his arms and he starts to pout. And I said, what's the problem? He says, nothing. I said, are you having fun? He says, no. I said, are you hypnotized? He goes, no. I said, well, then why don't you leave? The guy thinks for a minute. He goes, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction. And so in that moment, I had this epiphany. I realized that's a very good metaphor for all of us in life. We all have a place we want to go, a dream, a hope, a desire, a goal. And we start moving towards our dreams. And then we hit our invisible walls. And we try to apply effort. We try to push harder, right? I'm gonna just really, you know, suck it up. But what the reality is that he could have pushed all day long. It wouldn't have gotten him any further, because what he really needed to do was to wake up.
Yeah.
And so that's what we all really need to do, is to wake up. We need, you know, in the sense, the spiritual sense of waking up, meaning to like not believe everything you think, not be completely immersed in your own thinking process, but rather to step back from it and be, as I said, backstage. I told Ellie, who's this beautiful woman who told me she's 66, who looks like half that. And I said, when you're backstage, you don't age.
Yeah. Right?
So
yeah.
That's what I started teaching. So that became, you know, understanding mindfulness, understanding meditation, having experienced it, and then having this one very funny experience, I said, this is what I want to do. So I became a speaker. And I wrote this book on hypnosis, and it became a number one Amazon bestseller. And then I started doing some speaking.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And so, you've kind of encapsulated what unhypnosis is all about, and it makes complete sense. I know that myself, not only as an entrepreneur, but in life, I've hit that invisible wall many times.
Right. And see, one of the things people need to realize, I think people become discouraged when they look at, you know, celebrities and, you know, public figures, and they think, oh, we've all got it together all the time. But the reality is we're always hitting walls. And what we do differently is we've learned some skills and strategies that allow us to more quickly dissolve those walls, or even to look at them and embrace them in a different way. Because, you know, most people hit an obstacle and they feel that that obstacle is the reason they can't move on, when the reason they can't move on is that their inability to know what to do with their thinking and feelings pertaining to that obstacle.
Absolutely. Well, and I think there's another expression that I heard recently, and this might resonate. The goal that I have, the person that I am today, cannot complete that goal.
Yeah,
right?
That's great.
Right. So, and it's that constant growth and moving forward. And so Unhypnosis,
yes,
the first best-selling book, and then you launched your speaking career.
Yes.
Okay. And when you get on stage, what's the message? What's the one or two takeaways that you really want people to take that will move them forward in their life?
You know, when I said a little bit earlier, don't believe everything you think, if I could just implant that one belief in people, I think that it would be, that would, I would have done my job, right? So there are a number of things. I mean, first of all, I believe that we started talking about this off air, is that success does not create happiness. Happiness creates success. So you need to start there. You need to start with, you know, what is my mental state? How much mastery do I have over it? And how, to what extent am I letting external experiences determine how I feel about myself, how I feel about the world around me, right? So that's really what I'm going in with. I'm going in with, what's your relationship with the circumstances of your life? What's your relationship with your emotions, right? Because, you know, I've grown up with anxiety, with depression. I've had all that stuff, right?
It's same.
But the reality is that my relationship with those feelings have changed. So when I feel those feelings, I don't automatically collapse into, you know, complete misery. There's always a part of me now that has the ability to, like, look at the feeling, to sit with the feeling, to embrace it. So a lot of the message really comes down to love, right? It's self-love. It's loving what you're feeling and knowing how to be with it. You know, in Buddhist philosophy, they say that mindfulness is awareness plus equanimity, which means I know what I'm feeling and I can handle it. I'm not judging it. It's like, it just is. And the benefit of that, I mean, the multiple benefits of that are, well, I told you a little bit earlier that I was in a car accident, right? I had a car accident the night before last. Somebody just T-boned my car. They just smashed right into the side of my car, blew out the window, like total, not quite totaled it, but.
The night before last.
Night before last.
I met you yesterday for coffee. I had no idea that this had happened to you.
Yeah, good example.
Sorry, so. Move forward, but I'm going to tie that back into my next question.
Yeah, so it becomes a non-issue, right? And as you do more of this kind of work, all that misery, all that trouble and stress becomes a non-issue, because as soon as it happens, like you said, the person I was, like you, it's every aggravation is an invitation to rise above. And it's like, great, this is one more opportunity to rise above. So it's like, why would I possibly let myself be miserable about this? Like, I know sooner or later I'm going to figure it out. And we say, someday we'll look back at this and laugh. Why wait?
why wait? Why not now? Yeah, and I love, you were gracious enough to sign this book, this fantastic book, Buddha in the Trenches, The Timeless System for Developing Unshakable Performance Under Pressure. That is your new book. Your newest, yeah. Newest book. And you signed it to Amanda with appreciation, calm in chaos, happy for no reason, bulletproof.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks. And the bulletproof concept is really cool, because in the preface of the book, I mean, the first thing I do is I address the title, because, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're religious in some other sense, you might hear Buddhist and think it's a religious book, which it isn't. And so I wanted to address that, make people understand that it's just a metaphor. You know, Buddha in the Trenches means calm on the battlefields of life. But then I talk about this historical thing for personal history is, remember Superman, right? And when I was a kid, and I was an unhappy kid, I had, you know, I was bullied and whatnot, and I'd watch Superman, George Reeves, right? And, you know, he'd stand there with his hands on his hips, and they'd shoot him, and he'd just, like, smile while they were shooting him, because the bullets just bounced off. And I longed to be that, right? I wanted to be the impervious to the bullets. And the psychic bullets, the psychological bullets, you know, so if somebody was like making fun of me, that it wouldn't hurt, right? So as we go through our lives, what are the things that are happening to us that we allow to hurt us? And what if we were essentially bulletproof? Not like I've got, not like I'm armored, I don't care, but like love goes in, but all that other misery stuff just bounces off.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I mean by bulletproof.
No, absolutely. And so if you were to, you know, to give a couple of quick tips on that, making that happen for people.
Well, the first step is recognizing that you're the one doing it to yourself, right? That's step one, because most people have not even gotten that far. They just, you know, go along thinking that things are happening to them and there's nothing, you know, and the only thing they could do about it is react. So that's the first step. The second step, once you acknowledge that, is to make a commitment to happiness. Now, that's not the same as the, like, I'm always going to go around happy, right? This is a distinction I really need to make. So it's not like, you know, smack a smile on your face and pretend that you're not upset. What it is, it's an intention. My intention is to arrive back in a place of happiness whenever I'm thrown off course, right? So I acknowledge that sometimes I'm not happy, that sometimes I'm really angry or irritated or afraid or anxious or depressed or whatever. Those things happen. But always in the back of my mind is, okay, what do I need to do to get back to happiness, right? So the first step, again, is recognizing that you're the one doing it to yourself. In other words, you are imprisoned by the thoughts in your own head. So Gurdjieff said the first step for escaping from prison is realizing you're in prison, right? So that's a recognition. And the second step is you know, having the intention to move in the direction, to a positive direction. So then what begins to come into play is, what is the technology of happiness? What is the technology of serenity? And it really is that we have experiences occur that are undesirable, that cause us to feel stressed or miserable or reactive or sad or whatever. And then we immediately react, right? So we have a circumstance happens, we feel something, and then our thought process kind of wraps itself around the emotion that we just felt. And so the thoughts that we have then cause more of the same feelings. You ever notice that, you know, if you're depressed, then your thoughts are depressing, and then the depressing thoughts make you more depressed?
It's like a snowball. It gets bigger, yeah. Rolls downhill.
Right.
Yeah.
So so there's a cycle or a loop, and, you know, they call it the wheel of karma. So, you know, the thought causes the feeling, causes the thought, causes the feeling, and you start to churn. You know, the churning is like, and another thing, and the next time I get a hold of them, I should have said this to them. And, you know, you're stuck in this sort of endless loop of misery because you're letting the feeling create the thought, and then you're letting the thought create the feeling. Okay, so what we have to do is we've got to discipline ourselves to know how to direct our attention to just the feeling and not the thought, and very specifically just the sensation part of the feeling. So what that means is, let's say that, you know, somebody does something that's aggravating to me. Well, I have a choice of thinking lots of aggravating thoughts about that person, which will then aggravate me further. Or, you know, I may live in the illusion that I can tell that person what they did wrong, and then they're going to say, oh, yeah, you're right, I'm wrong, you're perfect, I suck, and then everything is going to go away, and you'll be fine. But it never works, because people don't operate that way, because everybody's got their own reality. So instead, what you do is you say, oh, I just noticed I got tripped up by this circumstance, caused this thought, and now I'm feeling these feelings, okay? Now, what I'm going to do, and this is the inner work, okay? And this is something that requires practice. This is why meditation is so valuable, okay? Is that in the moment when you recognize that your thoughts have caused you misery, your entire job from that moment onward is to turn your attention away from thought and to simply attend to the sensation of the emotion. So every emotion, it has a set of sensations. You know, maybe you feel something in the pit of your stomach, or you feel heat in your face, or whatever that is. If you were to simply turn your attention, this is like in meditation, like Vipassana meditation, simply become mindful of the sensations in your body and become fascinated by them. Not like, I shouldn't be feeling this way, but instead like, you know, pressure in my stomach, heat in my face, how interesting. You become a scientist studying your own inner experience. And as you do that, the thoughts start to kind of wind down. And now you're left with you and your experience of the sensation, which is far less troubling than you might have thought it was, because you were busy building on it. Now you're not building on it. Now you're just like, oh, okay, now this is an unpleasant sensation, but, you know, if I look at it deeply enough, it's like when you look at a billboard, right? From far away, you see the image. You get up really close, just a bunch of dots, right? And it's the same with our sensations, right? If you get in close enough to them, they're just like, it's just energy in your body, right? So you just learn how to bring your attention into the energetic experience of that emotion, and suddenly you're no longer in the cycle. You're not thinking the thing that makes you feel the thing that makes you think the thing that makes you feel the thing anymore. So all of what I just described, it implies a certain level of inner strength and practice. Right? You can't do what I just described if it's the first time you're doing. If like all of a sudden you're really upset and you're kind of being bowled over, well, that's not the time to try to practice this. You practice it when you're sitting at home alone. And, you know, I'm just going to sit here and feel what it feels like to be in my body so that I get used to understanding what it is to just observe sensation, so that it becomes a default. You default to that experience when it really matters most. So that's some of what it takes to get happy. And then the other part, I know we got time.
You're good.
Okay.
You're good.
So the next thing that we have to recognize, so, you know, first of all, we're recognizing that we're the cause of it. Then we're committing ourselves to being happy, right? And then what we're doing is we're starting to develop focus, the ability to focus on sensation so that when the time comes, we can then lean in to the sensation rather than running from it by trying to fix it or think our way out of it, which never works. And then finally...
Or God forbid, medicate our way out of it.
Or medicate our way out of it, right? So ultimately, what we need to do is we also need a support system. We need, you know, we need community. We are not isolated on this planet, even though sometimes we feel like we are. So I call it assemble your lifeboats. That's what we call it in the book, assemble your lifeboats. In other words, sometimes you're drowning in your own stuff. And, you know, maybe you've been practicing meditation, but you're not a master. I'm not a master. I've been doing it for 30 years. I'm not a master. I'll still get tripped up. So maybe if I'm tripped up, I know my technology. I go sit somewhere and I could work my way through it. But sometimes it's like something really big. And I'm really struggling. Maybe I'm struggling with a bout of anxiety or depression, and I can't pull myself out of it. But I've assembled my lifeboats, which means I know the people who I can trust to embrace me, to love me, to give me space to be what I am rather than trying to fix me.
And I have to tell you, so in my own personal journey, trying to move toward being more at peace and mm-hmm. better at all of these things that you've just talked about and laid out so eloquently. One of the biggest issues has been assembling the lifeboats. Well, I shouldn't say that. Actually, it's been amazingly magical how they've come to me as I've changed my level of awareness and reality. But what was painful was that some of what I thought were my lifeboats fell away.
Yes. So, you know, we have all kinds of friends. Right. And that's fine. You know, you could have all kinds of friends and some of them are lifeboats and some of them aren't. You know, so you just want to be careful with that because I've got friends who I, you know, play frisbee with, and I've got friends that I walk dogs with, and, you know, and I've got friends who I'll speak a little more deeply with, and then I've got other friends who are the ones, they're the lifeboats, where I absolutely know that they see the bigger me.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, that's who your lifeboats are. So try to be aware, try to be cognizant of who are the people who support you in the way that, you know, that after that conversation or that space of time with each other, you've like let go of some of that energy.
And so personally and professionally, you have surrounded yourself with some amazing people. And I want to move on to a couple of other projects that you've had recently, one being a book that you were featured in.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm excited about the book Habit One, which is 100 Habits of the Happiest Achievers on the Planet, which is a great compilation. This is the kind of book you put in your bathroom. You just read a chapter in like 2 minutes. And they're all 100 people, myself included. Oh, look, I just turned to Eric Swanson.
Oh, there you go.
Who have, you know, just decide to be awesome. Is his thing.
Absolutely.
You know, think backwards is another one. So, like, you just read, like, one little thing, and it'll change your day, maybe change your life. So that's one thing I'm excited about.
Yeah, and you know what, Eric, if you're listening, he taught me to say absolutely instead of yes, uh-huh, or things like that. Yeah. So anyway, I used it, Eric, so... Anyway, so that's fantastic. I love that you're doing that. And then you're also, in your speaking career, you've teamed up with Eric Swanson in another endeavor.
So Eric and I are you know, very, very happy to be presenting something called the Habitude Warrior Conference.
Yeah.
And it's a conference, I'll show this to people in the home thing there. It's a two-day TED Talk style conference. We bring in 22 speakers, some of the top speakers in the world, people like Brian Tracy, Les Brown, Eric Swanson, Armando Montalongo from Flip This House, Sharon Lecter from Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And what we do is we just absolutely transform your life. You know, we bring you in front of this group of remarkable people, and we do a lot on the first day with your mindset and how to overcome challenges. And the second day, we do a lot with your skill set and being a better salesperson, being better at social media. So the combination of skill set and mindset is like, it's irrefutable. People come out of this thing with more enthusiasm and with more ideas, and then they build their business, and we see remarkable things happen. And the conference, we're actually doing one right here in St. Louis.
I'm so excited. I'm going.
Yep.
With a bunch of my friends.
Yeah, we love, you know, people who are looking to grow their lives, who are open-minded and are go-getters and are action takers. And this, you know, and for the action takers out there, you know, conferences like these are usually $2,000 or $3,000. Ours is a very reasonable $997 for a two-day all-inclusive conference. But we're going to figure out a way to provide you with a link, those of you listening to this and watching this, where you can go, and I will give you the what we call the group discount that we usually, you know, restrict just to the small groups we work with. But we just happen to have a few extra tickets that we'll be able to. So first come, first serve. But
that nice sweet talked him a little bit.
And she did, kind of, yeah. So it's you definitely have Amanda to blame for this, to thank for this. But we'll be able to provide tickets for half price.
That is so fantastic. Yeah. I love that. And I think it's an exceptional value. They're TED style talks. And I can't wait to go. I think it's going to be just amazing, amazing energy there and so much to learn. And so, yeah, so you're going to provide a link, and we can do that through facebook.com/getrealtoheal.
Okay, that's what we'll do. So I'll make sure you have a link, and that'll just be a place you'll go, and it'll just allow you to go in and bang out your order form at the discounted rate. And yeah, it's pretty remarkable.
Awesome. I'm so excited about that. Awesome. Okay. All right. Any last thoughts that you want to pull together? And also, how can people reach out to you or follow up?
So if you want to follow up with me, just visit my website, which is stevetaubman.com. And there's a whole world there. So learn more about me there. And some of my products and programs are available there as well. And what do I have? 30 seconds. You want to hear a poem for me to give you my final words?
Bring it.
This is about leading with your heart. When you make a commitment to lead with your heart, it becomes very easy to know where to start. You know not to believe everything on your mind, and what worries you sometimes will change on a dime. And nothing's impossible when you stay the course. Persistence will always beat effort and force. Like the great Don Quixote, you live by your quest. Like a phoenix from ashes, you rise o'er the rest. As a leader who's focused on what's here and now, you know what to do, to reject or allow. You're powerful, limitless, loving, and so be present and wakeful, be quiet, and know that nothing's impossible for me or for you. So go forth and lead in a way that is true. Do what you love and the money will follow, and so will the world if your goals aren't hollow. Live from your soul, make magic from strife, and you'll leave a legacy that outlives your life.
I mean, how do you even follow that with any kind of wrap up? That is fantastic. I have enjoyed every moment I have spent with you, Dr. Steve Taubman.
It's been delightful. You're awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I look forward to many more conversations. Yeah. This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. For this and other episodes, find us on soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal. You can also reach out to me on facebook.com/getrealtoheal anytime. And of course, go there to check out the link from today's show. And if you'd like a consult with me or to reach out for any other reason, amandalaplante.com or 314-583-6749. Make it a great day.